Welcome to Medroom Chronicles. Join nurses and other care providers as they let you in on discussions usually reserved for the privacy of the locked medication room. In this weekly nursing podcast, the filters come off and we tell it like it is. Your hosts, nurses Adrienne Benning and Andrew Craig, are here to educate and entertain on all things in the nursing world. This podcast is intended for nursing students, nurses, nursing assistants, and other care providers. Non-medical folk will probably get a kick out of us too. If you like what you hear, subscribe and share. Happy nursing, folks. Welcome to Medroom Chronicles, everybody. It's 2018, and I'm going to officially call this season two. I am your host, Adrienne Benning. I'm an intermediate pulmonary and palliative care nurse living in the Midwest, and I have a lot to talk about, you guys. If you were with us for season one, welcome back. I am still here, though I took a really, really long winter break. I've been hibernating really hard, you guys. But today, I've got a few different things for you. I'm going to talk to our old pal, Nurse Andrew Craig of Traveler Talk fame, and we're going to try to rapid-fire some topics back and forth. You're going to hear a conversation from earlier this month, January, about the IV fluid shortage we're experiencing, nurses who smoke, nurses who have tattoos or other body modifications, and we're also going to talk about a live webcast of Andrew getting waxed. You heard me right, and I know you're intrigued, so let's just go ahead and jump right on in.
Okay. So tell me about some of the viewer feedback that we received.
So yeah, so, you know, we have a million and one things to talk about. We run a little long. So one of the tidbits of feedback that I've gotten is that people want a little bit of a more bite-sized show so that they can listen to it. Most people don't have a commute that's over an hour. I mean, some people do, but you know, it's hard to digest. And I find the same thing. I have podcasts that I love, but if it's over an hour long, I end up like not listening to the last like 20 minutes of every episode. So we're gonna try to be concise, which I so far have not had any luck at yet tonight. But also I want to think about this more in terms of, instead of like these long, wonderful, rambling conversations we have that I really look forward to, I want to give people some bite-sized nuggets, kind of news reports, if you will. So even though we're not just covering news, there's a lot of editorial, a lot of conversation. Isolate our topics a little bit better so that we do it in a way that's not going to turn into a 2-hour long conversation like it has 100 times.
Well, I feel like we're the most wordy people on the planet. So this is good. We have goals. We have bite-sized goals, and we're going to knock them out, Adrian. We're going to, let's say like 5 minutes per topic, and that's it. And we cut each other
really
off.
Do you really think that we can stick to 5 minutes at a time?
You know what? Hold your horses. Hold on. I'm gonna find a stopwatch on Google here.
I've got one right here. I've got my phone.
Okay. Google
on a timer.
You literally Google stopwatch and one comes up, okay?
Okay.
So I think the first topic that we need to broach immediately, right away.
So let's talk about the IV fluid shortage that's occurring in the United States and probably Central America even more so. Let me just give a quick little 30-second intro to this, and that is that I didn't know this until all of this began, but Puerto Rico is our primary source of intravenous fluids. So normal saline, which we use, I was going to say we use like water. It is fucking water. Sugar water that people need, which also means that we're short on medications that come mixed in those liquids. So it started, I was watching people on Twitter, because I watched the nursing community on Twitter, lots of people in the southern United States were having a shortage, then it creeped up a little bit into like those mid states, and now up here in Iowa, and I'm sure everywhere. We need these. Like, these are critical. So because we don't have these, we have to make changes to our workflow. I'm curious about the long-term implications to central, well, not just central line, but just in general blood infections because of the way we have to practice now.
What are you seeing? What are you noticing?
So normally, you know, you go into the med room and there's an OmniCell, our little storage and inventory system. And usually there's like a section where it's just all IV fluids and it's just piled. Just, you've got hundreds of bags of 250 milliliter bags, 500 mil bags, liter bags. You've got dextrose, you've got D5 half, like you've got all these different fluids. Well, now you go in, there's a small pile. Sometimes there's none, literally none. Like there was a period of time before we kicked in to alternative ways of getting these fluids, where if you wanted a liter bag of normal saline, you had to call the pharmacy and ask for it. Like if your patient's blood pressures go soft and you need a bolus, like you can't just go into the med room and get it and spike it and it's running. Like they have to, well, does this patient need it? Do they really need it? Do they really, really, really need it? You know, I'm having to, instead of hanging IV piggybacks, I'm having to actually do like an IV push of like an antibiotic. And I've seen other nurses say that they've had experiences where they're standing at a bedside for 30 minutes, slowly pushing.
Stop it. Stop it.
Not
here. Are you messing with me?
Like, for me, I've had to do 3 to 5 minute infusions where I'm pushing. Like, for example, we have to do, I don't know. See, I work like 2-3 days a week, so it's hard for me to tell what the current trend is because it's been changing a lot. But basically, we, like, I'm pushing meropenem, which I usually hang, you know, and infuse. Zosyn we still have in the bag, thank God, because I don't want to know what the push is on Zosyn. We run that over 4 hours. So there's a number of different factors here, and I know we're at 3 minutes. I don't want to take up all the time. We might have to go a little bit longer on this topic. I might make the executive decision to make this a 7 or 8 minute. But anyway, so we're doing more IV pushes, so we have to know, how fast do I push this med? Can I push this med? Is this med compatible with other meds that I'm pushing? Are they going to have cardiac symptoms from this? Is it going to make them vomit? Is it going to fuck up their veins? Like, I need to know all these things. So there's liability for me. What if I push it too fast? What if I don't, you know, dilute it right? So there's that. Second is I'm accessing their IV way more than I normally would be. I'm actually disconnecting and reconnecting, whether it be a syringe or whatever. Normally, when you've got a, you know, normal saline piggyback running, you just go in, you spike the bag right into the piggyback. You don't have to disconnect a lot of lines. There's fewer opportunities for you to contaminate that line. Even if you're meticulous at your practice, statistically speaking, the more you access that line, the greater the risk is that you're going to get something dirty. So there's that. Then there's the fact that I have to fucking stand there. This med needs to be pushed, which means those are minutes I'm not on the floor. Then if all the other nurses are also doing 3 to 5 to 15 to 30 minute pushes, they're also not on the floor. So these implications are far reaching. So I'm concerned about what are our infection rates going to look like long time since we're, you know, accessing IVs so much more. Starting to see a little bit of a flow of these primary bags coming back. So I'm hoping that maybe we're finding other ways. But like, I Googled it and I found out that some people are getting IV bags from like Europe and stuff, which, you know, our healthcare system is so affordable as it is, we can afford to import from like across the ocean. All right. That was just 5 minutes of me ranting. I'll shut up now. Your take.
I'll keep mine 30 seconds because I don't want to take away from the next topic. I was kidding. So yeah, basically I noticed we were at UW-Madison. We were encouraged to change up the type of the sizes of bags. We didn't get to a point where our shelves were not like full. We were pretty fortunate in that regard. Maybe other units felt that crunch. But what we did have to change up is the style of piggyback that we use. So, for instance, I know at least last time I was at Iowa University, basically everything is mixed up, ready to go. Mm-hmm. Already, you don't do any type of mixing in the med room. Well, that's the only place that I've seen that happen. Whereas every other place that I've been at, you took the powdered bottle, you spiked it in the piggyback bag, you crunched the little connection between the two, and you mixed the powder between the two in the med room. What I had to see even more interesting was the completely different new type of adapter that connects the powdered bottle to the liquid bag, and a fancy adapter depending on the style of bottle, depending on the manufacturer of antibiotic. So it got a little complicated. The other issue that we, or the other practice change that we saw, is, and you kind of alluded to it, which is the IV push antibiotics. But what I did see is Alaris makes this nifty little channel where you can connect your syringe to a small, tiny little IV line, and it can run as like its own little primary. Like it'll literally depress the syringe and infuse the antibiotic, the 10 mils of antibiotic over a certain amount of time. So you don't have to actually manually push that there. The UW had this. So it's kind of cool. Yeah. But did you guys have that?
No, we don't have those. Like we have to actually stand there, and like in my head, I have to be like, okay, I have to push this over 3 minutes. What's a third of this? I'm going to push a third of this over the course of a minute. You know, when you have a patient that like can't sit still or wants to sleep or wants to curl back up and, you know, forgets that you're attached to their freaking IV in their arm or wherever. We've also our Department of Epidemiology has had to determine how far they can stretch the tubing use. Ordinarily, we're changing out IV tubing every 24 hours.
We are?
You know, as a standard. Well, we are if it's not continuous. So if you're breaking the line and it's not a continuous, like say TPN, you can run that ordinarily for like 3 days. But if you're just running like an antibiotic and you're disconnecting them in between, that tubing's only good for 24 hours because of the risk of contamination of that line. Now, you know, at first they stretched it to a day or an extra day, and then they stretched it to 3 days. So I don't know how they make these determinations, but basically, like, that's another liability. Do I want to be responsible for tubing that's been hanging there for 3 days? Like, do I want to be responsible for the cleanliness and integrity of that system? Not really.
Right. I think that's a great place to stop, because that is probably the most optimistic way to stop that particular conversation. All right, let's talk about nurses smoking weed. So here, this is a really interesting topic, and I hear about this more frequently, I'd probably say, than the average person. Only reason is because I hear about travel nurses in California, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, all the main states that are legally allowing weed. So here's my stance. I believe that nurses should be able to smoke weed. And the reason, however, it is still federally illegal. So when a nurse smokes weed, breaking federal laws. Now, is a SWAT team going to be breaking down the door of a nurse that smokes a joint? Highly unlikely. But marijuana has been shown again and again to do a lot of really great things for a lot of different people with various illnesses, whether that's psych or physical or whatever. But I don't think nurses are less of a professional by smoking weed because nurses also take psych meds, they take pain meds, they take blood pressure meds. What makes, or they take antipsychotics, they take benzos, antidepressants, you know, all those mind-altering meds. Now, I understand that marijuana has obviously a different an effect, of course. I mean, you're high, so you obviously shouldn't go to work high. But in your own time, in your own house, if you want to smoke weed, then by God, you should be able to smoke weed, especially when so many states have determined that its citizens can rightfully smoke weed. That's where I stand with it. I know of plenty of nurses that smoke weed personally. It's just they take the risk. You know, that's the risk they take. If they ever pop, you know, positive on a UA, whether it was an incident at work, they're probably going to get fired. They're probably going to get reported to the Board of Nursing, and they're going to get hit on their license. And that's a risk they take to smoke weed. So me, I've been there, done that. It's not a part of my life anymore. I get drug tested on the regular as a traveler and travel nurse. And plus, it's just kind of like an itch that I've already scratched. Now, if my state and the federal government deemed it legal and my state was legal, you know, would I partake? Maybe. Now that would depend upon if my job said it was okay. So that's kind of where I stand. I don't understand why it's okay to take narcotics, benzos, antipsychotics, antidepressants, all those mind altering things, when it's not okay to smoke weed.
Well, and I'd also like to remind you that as like industries in these legal states develop, that there are also ways you can consume marijuana or consume to have the positive effects without actually having the psychoactive properties. You know, there are some of these oils and tinctures that will help with whatever symptoms you're trying to ail, anxiety, nausea, you know, gut. I mean, the list is probably like a mile long. That there are ways you can use these products and reap the benefits without ever feeling high. So that's the first thing I want to say. And actually, Iowa has been going back and forth about giving CBD oil, actually not like the non-THC stuff that they've got now, but like we've been arguing about giving it to kids with seizure disorders. Like it's proven to help them. And I was like, okay, you can use it. Like you can use it, but you can't acquire it, basically is what they're saying.
That is stupid. That's really stupid.
Say that, yes, you're right. People are taking other mind-altering medications while they're working. You know, there are also a lot of nurses that have issues with alcohol. And so I think that everything in moderation is key. But if I'm, you know, you have to know what your state's laws are, what your policies are at your job, and also, you know, what your expectations are. Like if you're on call, anything that's going to fuck you up, basically, whether that be taking a sleeping pill, smoking a joint, drinking a cocktail, like maintain your integrity. But also, like, weed is a little different because we can test for it. How do I know, Andrew, that you didn't get absolutely faced last Saturday night? How do I know? Now, I know you didn't because I know you, but if I were your employer, I have no idea of knowing that. So that better, worse, or different than me being at home and like having, you know, a joint out on my patio when I don't work for another 3 days. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a patio nor a joint, but and I imagine you probably were not shit faced on Saturday, but we can't make these assumptions. And so we need to make sure that we are practicing not only with integrity and a clear mind so that we don't hurt somebody, but also or someone that partakes of whatever it is. You need to be responsible. Don't ruin it for the fucking rest of us, okay? Like, don't come to work high. Don't come to work drunk. Don't come to work impaired. You know, for some people, taking a benzo gets them to baseline if they have, like, a major anxiety disorder. But also, like, you need to know how these things affect you. Even over-the-counter meds. If you're not sure how Benadryl is going to affect you, don't take a Benadryl before you go to work. Mm-hmm. I think that applies to anything that alters your ability to think clearly and react in an emergency. Us to 6 minutes, but I think that attitudes are going to have to grow and change as research shows us more. We are creatures of evidence-based practice, and so we need to make sure that we're looking at the evidence. So, evidence says that there are plenty of weed smokers that are able to keep their shit together and go to work and do a great job. And then, you know, their evenings, weekends, days off, vacations, those are there.
Yeah. Just like people that, like I said, just like people taking pain meds, just like people drinking, just like taking benzos, antipsychotics, all those things. There's plenty of nurses that are fully capable of doing their job and partaking in things like that in their own free time. I think the challenge will be, I'm just going to end with this because I could ramble on this for a little while, is if there was a way to determine the adequate level of being so-called high, kind of like being drunk, you know, like the 0.08 is the alcohol level or whatever. If there was like a 0.08 level for THC in a person's system, or you know what I'm saying? A measurable right. way to
if
determine.
There's a way to determine that. But at the moment, yeah. as far as I know, there is not. And it's
that's the issue,
my understanding, and I don't know, but I think that THC actually adheres to like fatty cells. So, right. you know, your body does store it. I don't know about other drugs. And also I'd like to say, like, if it's illegal, it's legal. Like, I wouldn't necessarily make this argument about other illegal drugs. But we're seeing more and more evidence that says that even though it's scheduled like heroin, it ain't heroin, baby. So,
it's right. It ain't heroin, baby.
So I want to jump right into then, you know, talking about nurses who smoke cigarettes, because that's a very different topic. And I first want to say, the very first thing I want to say is I smoked for over 10 years. I smoked while I was a nursing assistant. I rolled unfiltered hand rolled cigarettes. Like I would just pull out my pouch and just roll one up and I would go out to the ramp and sometimes I would smoke too.
Did the roller make that sound?
No, it wasn't a roller. Like I rolled them with my hand.
Manly, like you're rolling your own cigarette joint.
Yeah, basically, except you're not making it like joint shaped where it's like twisted at the ends. Like it's just like a tube, like a cigarette. And I here's the thing. I do not miss smoking. I've been quit for 3 years now. Mm-hmm. And I just want to talk briefly about why I quit. But I first want to legitimize this by saying like it was possible. I have an e-cigarette in my hand. It's my backup for when I do things that like trigger me to want. I don't have any addiction to cigarettes anymore. They make me sick when I smell them. But like it's that like I don't know, that tactile whatever.
Yep.
But anyway, I smoked for 10 years. I would go out to the ramp. I would hide in the ramp because it was, you know, you'd get fined if you smoked in the ramp. I would stand out in the fucking freezing cold. You know, I'd be like, I'm sick. I have a sore throat. I shouldn't smoke a cigarette. And then I smoke a cigarette. I was one of those. And if you were to say to me, like, maybe you shouldn't smoke that, I would say, well, now I want to. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was a very kind of militant, belligerent smoker, even though I watched most of my family die from smoking-related shit. So, anyway, started working on a pulmonary floor, was a nursing assistant, was a smoker, worked with other nurses that had been nurses for a long time that smoked. We'd go out. Anyway, that was waiting for lungs, was on the transplant list. And I went in after having a cigarette and didn't even think about it and went in to like empty his Foley catheter or something. And he looked at me and he said, did you just smoke a cigarette? And the way he said it, as he's like sitting there, like dying from like a disease that he didn't cause, it made me want to just like melt into a puddle of diarrhea on the floor. Like I felt so horrible. And it was like this weird kind of coincidence or not coincidence. I don't know. But when I went out for a cigarette or when I was leaving work or something, I dropped my tobacco pouch, which had my papers in it. My lighter was rolled up in it. It was like my whole nation. I dropped it somewhere walking from the hospital to the parking lot that's like a block away. Shit you not, that morning I walked back and forth up and down that parking lot for an unreasonable amount of time looking for that pouch, getting angrier and angrier and angrier, and finally had to give up the search for whatever reason. It was cold. I was tired. People were going to think I was like having a mental breakdown walking up and down. So finally I went home, and you know, since I'd worked night shift, I went to bed that day. My boyfriend at the time, who's still my partner, has been my partner for like 11 years. A shop that sold e-cigarettes. And some guy that he had known that was like a regular in the store came in and, you know, they were just genuinely or casually chatting about how I was quitting. And this guy came back in the next day with like a container or later that day with a container of like all of the accoutrement for an e-cigarette, a couple extra batteries, chargers,
or coils, I mean. And Doug came home that evening and I woke up and he was like, here's an e-cigarette. And I, you know, I had some stumbles after that where I did go back to smoking, but for the most part, I quit. And since in the 3 years that I've quit, I've probably had four cigarettes, you know, probably because I was like drinking and I was like, why not? And every time I get about halfway through and I'm like, why am I doing this? This is gross. So to get here. But so I just wanted to give that very long rambly disclaimer to say, like, I know what it's like to be like, fuck you, I'm not going to do what you tell me.
Right.
But now I'm one of those people that if somebody's smoking three cars ahead of me and I got my window down, it makes me sick to my stomach. So,
yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with tobacco in general. I started smoking when I was in the late part of high school, and then I started using chewing tobacco to hide the fact that I smoked. See, chew is way, way easier to hide. I could chew during class. I could blah, blah, blah. And I mainly did it as a rebellious thing. Mom always told me to not smoke, not chew. And sure enough, I did exactly what she told me not to do because I'm just like, screw you, Mom. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want to do. And that was just part of that time of my life. Smoking and chewing was a big part of my life in high school and college, outside of college, before I went to college, rather. In fact, I tried to quit multiple times. In fact, I tried to quit during nursing school, which was absolutely a horrible decision. In fact, one of my nursing instructors, I mean, I broke down many times during nursing school. Nursing school sucks so much ass. But basically, she looked at me and she's like, do not stop during nursing school. Do not, you can't handle it. And I was shocked. I was floored, actually, that she said that to me. But she recognized that it was one of the ways I used to cope. You know, that was a damn good nurse. I mean, I completely understand the ethical issues with that, but she was just like, you need this right now, and I had a lot going on in my life. But so I is it hypocritical of healthcare people to smoke? Yes, but at the same time, also, it's addictive.
We're humans. Extremely, we have habits before we started being nurses.
Exactly. Like, exactly. And, you know, from that standpoint, the people that say that have never done it, that have never been addicted to something, really have no say because they've never been there. It's kind of like it's hard to get advice from someone that's never been obese telling me how to eat healthy because you know how it is. And granted, they struggle too. But it's hard to hear, you know, when you don't have context, when you've never been down that road as a nurse, you know, not to say that you should, just so you have context. I'm just saying that, Sarah, for instance, never really smoked. I mean, she dabbled, you know, curiosity, but never was addicted like I was. Her perception of smokers and people that have addictions have drastically changed because of the struggle that we went during the quitting process, which was by far a horrible time in our relationship, mainly because when you quit, it mentally destroys you. You see people withdraw in the hospital. It's just like that. I've heard that heroin withdrawal and nicotine withdrawal are in the same realm of things in terms of the brain physiology. And it wouldn't surprise me because it's one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. Truthfully, I still have cravings periodically. I actually liked smoking. I like the feeling. I like the taste. It stinks to me now, but I enjoyed it.
I was the same way. I was someone that was I want to say this other thing. In addition to that, in addition to being like, well, I enjoy it, like, I'm not ready to stop yet. But at the same time, you know, one is that if you're the nurse on the unit that smokes, everybody knows it. And you better do your damnedest to make sure that you're not taking more fucking breaks than you deserve, because that is the fastest way to ruin your relationships with your coworkers. Mm-hmm. Is while they're cleaning up shit and running their ass off, you're outside having your second cigarette. Like, so keep your shit in check. Don't stink. I rolled my own, and so I personally still believe they don't stink as bad as commercial cigarettes, because the tobacco is different.
Like we had a respiratory therapist that I worked with for a long time. It smelled like an ashtray. Everybody knew it. Patients complained. Nurses didn't like it. So like, do your best to keep it in check. If you're going to be like, fuck you, like I've been smoking for X number of years and I'm not ready to quit. You know, we're asking our patients to do some pretty dramatic things, whether it be in terms of eating, changing behaviors, quitting their addictions. It's really easy to make those prescriptions. And we have to ask ourselves, are we being hypocritical if we're not doing that ourselves? You know, everybody's going to be able to argue that in either direction. But for me personally, the choice was I couldn't work with patients that are literally dying waiting for lungs, or people who have smoked themselves, you know, into a trach. I couldn't look them in the face knowing that I had just gone outside and like had a cigarette. My personal choice. I also can say I've benefited from it. I'm not going to lecture and be like, well, you can do this and that and this. But really, like, aside from the few times that I use my e-cigarette, which is less and less, and like I went to Chicago for 3 days and I didn't use my e-cigarette like the whole time I was there, so I can be without it, but there are just times that I miss rolling cigarettes. I don't miss smoking them, but I miss rolling it. It's that habituation, it's that like ritual of it. And when I quit so aside from like the philosophical, like, you know, story, like, you know, way that I quit, like, oh, I lost my pouch and then he presented it to me and I never looked back and blah, blah. Yeah, you know, it's not that. It's that I used an e-cigarette for a really long time. I gained a shit ton of weight because I was making up for that habit by snacking, like, you know, that oral hand-to-mouth fixation or whatever it is that drives our monkey brains to want to fucking smoke and do things that are bad for us. But I'm rambling now, but I'm not sorry I quit. I'm not sorry, and I encourage other people to try.
I was just thinking as you're talking, you know, I'm gonna, I pose the question to the group because I'm curious to see what other people think. I said, what do you think? Is it hypocritical to smoke as a nurse? Is it hypocritical to be obese as a nurse? Context, I've been addicted to tobacco, cigarettes, and chewing tobacco in the past. I've had weight problems my entire life. I understand the struggle. What do you think? So this should be interesting. I'm curious to see some of the responses as we continue on our talk, which I think is a prime opportunity to move on to our next topic.
Let's talk about...
On a side note, before we move into the next one, you want to hear some of the comments that
I do.
I've got 20-some comments so far on this. So regarding, is it hypocritical to smoke as a nurse? Is it hypocritical to be obese as a nurse? Some people said, hi, my name is Nurse. I'm a smoker and I enjoy wine and chocolate cake is my favorite breakfast food. Okay, I think that's a good answer. Some people said, I wonder the same things. One person said, I smoked for years and no, I didn't feel hypocritical. I was having the same smoker's complications as them. Finally quit 12 years ago. I tell everyone if I can quit, everybody and anybody else can. One person says, do as I say, not as I do. I say, not really. We are all human after all. And I think that's the truth. We are all human.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you got for me, Adrian?
Let's go with nursing and tattoos. I think we may have briefly touched on this in another episode, but I want to do a little quick 5 minute, and I didn't set the timer for the last one, so
right.
I'm gonna set a little timer just to keep us sort of on track. Nursing tattoos. Andrew, you are a tattooed nurse. I am a tattooed nurse.
Yes, we are.
There are lots of tattooed nurses. Yours are visible. Mine kind of aren't. Mm-hmm. So what do you think? What do you think about this?
What is this, the 21st century? I'd say any time that a tattoo does not, is not vulgar in some way, whether that's some gang sign, swastika, naked chick, dick pic, all that stuff that might offend people, it should be allowed. And this is a common practice it's part of our American culture. Tattoos have been around in other cultures for centuries. It's part of my interview process that I do with the managers of every hospital that I go to, though I did actually forget to ask this time around, because there is indeed hospitals that require nurses to cover up their tattoos, which normally I would refuse to go to. And I haven't yet. There was a time I interviewed, they were like, we don't know. I'm like, okay, well, I don't know either. Because
it's my skin.
It's my skin. So listen, a tattoo has nothing to do with a nurse's ability to take care of patients. It's about self, expression. And if that's what they want to do with their skin, that is their prerogative. Okay. And nor does it reflect a person's professionalism. The idea and mold of professionalism in this day and age is changing. And that's part of that. You know, nurses were the skirt wearing, hat wearing, wear your nursing pin, all white, pantyhose, wearing people for generations. And that's unfortunately some of this still that same perception that people come into the hospital with. There's still nurses that are wearing that. The Adrian, we met a lady in Minnesota that was wearing that. Are you like, yeah, are you kidding
me? I've seen nurses wearing like white hose and dresses.
It's like, what decade?
I have to do too much unladylike, quote unquote, unladylike stuff to be wearing a dress at work.
The thing is, I'm obviously 100% supportive of tattoos. I'm also supportive of people that don't want to have tattoos. That's their thing. But
yeah,
you know what?
But you know, I've had patients start conversations with me about it. Mm-hmm. I've taken care of elderly patients that have new tattoos. You know, people get tattoos for a number of different reasons. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And I agree, as long as it's, and you know what? I've even taken care of patients who have tattoos on them that indicate to me that they're not the kinds of people I would ordinarily associate with. Like, I've seen some very horrific, you know, like I've seen tattoos of swastikas on people, or like things that are clearly like prison tattoos or like gang tattoos, or I don't like it. But also, I did not sign up to take care of people conditionally, so I want to know what your tattoos mean. I hope they're not horrible, but mine are not. Mine are not visible, and so I don't think mine are an issue. But like mine on my arm, like peeks out underneath my sleeve sometimes. Mm-hmm. And people are always like, oh, can I see it? Can I see what you've got? And it's, mine's a tribute tattoo to my late father. And so people are like, oh, that's really sweet. That's really pretty. Like, are you going to get more? Like, and these are people like, you know, like your little old granny type. And they're like, oh, that's pretty. And I'm like, thanks, you know, but, I agree. Like if you would think that I was more professional because I was wearing a 3/4 length sleeve as opposed to a short sleeve, then what does that say about the service I'm providing you? That my appearance is the thing that determines illegitimacy as a professional. And I think we're constantly fighting that stereotype, like you said, of the nurse in like the little white dress with the white shoes and the hair just so. Like, we are working hard. We are really intelligent. We are scientists, essentially. That is what we are. We are physiologists to a particular, or by a particular means. Like, we do this role that is highly technical, and you don't want us to be touching up our makeup in the bathroom. You want us to be looking at your EKG to make sure you're not about to croak. Like, yes. Like right now you cannot tell, and listeners cannot tell, but I started using this really cool shampoo that makes my hair purple. And if I stop using it, it fades out really fast. And if I use it a couple times, it's purple again. It's really awesome. I love it. Maybe some people don't like it and they don't say anything, but like, this is my choice. I do this because it's not permanent.
So,
you know, doesn't make me a worse nurse because no. I have lilac colored hair. Like,
I completely,
and we've gotten away from tattoos, but it's that idea that my appearance is somehow tied to my value. Now, the thing that I do think appearance related that does discredit you is when you look like a fucking slob.
Right.
Like, we need to at least be clean. Tattoos don't make you dirty. security, as some people might have believed decades ago, or maybe still hold on to that. But the thing is that, you know, my fingernails are clean. My hair is washed. My face is clean. My makeup is reasonable. I have a fucking tattoo on my arm. Get over it.
I'll preach, sister, preach.
Like, they made, and I think, and I may have said this in a previous episode as well, but like, I went to school with a girl who had a tattoo on her neck. My nursing school made her put a bandage over it. That bandage looked more fucking horrific than the tattoo, because you're wondering, like, oh my God, what is growing on her neck? Like, that they made her put a bandage over it. Oh, it's a flower.
I know. I think. Yeah, I think it's a little bit generational. You know, the people that are running hospitals are not of our generation. We are very lax when it comes to tattoos in our generation. We're cool with it. We're very lax in a lot of things in terms of our acceptability. You know, you could talk about that. And so I think with time, I really think that that's going to change once tattoos just become acceptable, no matter what, no matter where nationwide. We're not there yet, but I think there needs to be a couple generate, maybe one generation to kind of grow up and retire or die off. And then our generation will get old and we'll be like, yeah, that's cool. You can have a tattoo. That's cool. Whatever. On a side note, I was Googling a little bit as you were talking, and I'm like, I Googled tattoo sleeves on doctors, and there was this really fascinating article of this family practice physician that I sent it to you. The title of the article is called A Word from Your Family Doctor. It's from this kind of like amateur blogger. And basically this family doctor, you can see one picture next to him is him in his full doctor garb. And the next is where he's in this sleeveless shirt full sleeves, kind of has a biker vibe to him, shaved head. And you would never guess that he is a physician.
Like in his doctor coat with a stethoscope and tie, he looks like this nerdy dude. But then he's like in jeans and a cutoff shirt, so and I think I've seen that image before, or at least one similar to it. And it's true, like, you know, our appearance does have an effect on some people, but I think that really we need to be promoting that, like, you know what, I can take really excellent care of you, and I have a fucking nose ring.
Yeah,
I think things can exist at the same time.
That's what I think people have to see, is there's these stereotypes of people with tattoos, even to this day, that they're associated with a person that lacks character, or that is associated with things, or is a criminal. You know, when you show people that you're just a normal human being that can do excellent care for them, tattoos really don't matter. So that's pretty cool.
That's my opinion as a tattooed person. And I'm sure there are other people that have other opinions, but they can share them in the comments. Once again, thank you to everyone who's listening. I had someone I work with come up to me and sheepishly say, I'm so sorry, but I wanted to ask you about this because I'm kind of stalking you because I'm listening to your podcast. And I was like, no, dude, that's so exciting. I want you to listen. Why would you apologize for listening to my podcast? Do you apologize for having listened to every episode? Like, I fucking love that. So,
That is so cool. So here, I had another thought. So the waxing situation is officially on, Adrian.
Oh, my Lord. That's right. Guys, for those of you that don't know, Andrew's group, Traveler Talk, the Facebook group that has grown exponentially since its creation a few months ago. One of the ways that Andrew has coaxed people in is not only with a community that fosters excellent discussion and growth and education and communication, but waxing. What the hell are you doing, Andrew?
I'm just going to give a brief history. I made a bet with an agency that they couldn't help me get to 10,000 members by December 31st, 2017. And that was like 3.5 months ago.
And we were at maybe, I don't know, 500 members by then. And I tapped into their resources intentionally because I wanted to grow. And we grew really quickly, really fast at first from their resources. But it kind of leveled off for a while. And then we grew big again. So they gave us the initial boost. But the stipulation was is if we got to 10,000 members, I would allow them, by that date, I would allow them to brand this waxing challenge that I have set forth with their agency branding. Basically what it is I made tiers, Adrian. So the more people that joined, the more my body that got waxed. And the stipulation was I'm going to get live waxed live on Facebook. I'm pretty sure I'm the only dude that's ever done this. And I'm going to do it on my public profile, not just in the group, so that people can share it. And hopefully this shit goes viral. But here's the range. So one leg is 1,500 members. Two legs is 3,000 members. Legs and back is 5,000 members. 10,000 members was like legs, back, chest, arms, armpits, eyebrows, it works. But we didn't make it to 10,000 members, but I did. I edited. I said, well, if we make it to 7,500 members, I would do legs, back, chest. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do my legs, my back, and my chest. And at this present moment, my wife, Sarah Craig, is going to be waxing her husband. So what I was getting at, Adrian, is this, oh yeah, here's another kicker, is it's going to be on March 5th, 2018, which is my 30th birthday. And I think this would be a great opportunity to have a live podcast for Medroom Chronicles.
We can totally do that. That's absolutely, yeah.
So we have a huge, huge living room right here that I'm going to get a massage table and there's lots of room for lighting. And it can be a big old party in here where we could do like a live. You could maybe even be kind of the commentator. And
oh my God. You know, what I was going to say right before you made this proposal was I was going to say, Andrew, as your friend, former coworker, colleague, esteemed co-host, mm-hmm. I was going to say, I don't know if I can be witness to the spectacle, but now that you've actually said this, I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm doing the commentary on this shit.
Well, plus it'd be a hilarious Medroom Chronicles live post or a live podcast, don't you think?
I think it's going to be stellar. And, you know, since we allow profanities to the excess, it'll be perfect because I have a feeling you're going to be screaming a few little profanities in there.
Yeah, I'm going to have to warn my neighbors, everyone in the building that imagine a strange dude walking on your door. Hi, my name is Andrew Craig. Oh, by the way, I'm going to be screaming fuck a lot for the next couple of hours. So I apologize ahead of time.
Because I'm getting waxed because I sold my soul for 7,500 members. I
sold my soul so bad.
I sold my hair. You know, I find it ironic that you're starting your third decade on this planet soft as a baby. and then when it grows back, you're going to be itchy as a motherfucker.
That's what I hear. I'm not really looking forward to that aspect, but...
Like, get a back scratcher before...
Right. Well, listen, it's just the way it's going to be. I'm,
Well, we look forward to that. So yeah, let's tentatively plan on live play-by-play by yours truly for this event on your birthday. Oh man, make sure you get a quality wax. That's all I can say. And make sure Sarah tests the temperature before she slaps it down. Those are my major tips for your waxing.
She has a thing. She has a thingy, a little wax warmer thingy.
Good.
Okay. And it's going to be all hard right. So wax. Apparently girls do these when they get together. They wax things.
Yep, I've done it before with a couple friends. We did eyebrows. We didn't do our backs, but, you know, what can I say?
Well, fortunately, my entire back isn't hairy. It's just I'm patchy.
On the day that you do this, I want a burn nurse's assessment of the percentage of body area.
Oh, my God.
Like, what is it, like a leg is 8% or something like that?
Yes. Something like that. Oh, geez. It's stupid, Adrian. I'm regretting it. And I'm like, well, I said I'd do it, so I'm going to do it.
You know what? You're going to do it, man, because you're a man of your word and you are a nurse of integrity and you won't get waxed.
What's your perception of this?
So I think that this milkshake has brought the boys to the yard. And so it served a purpose. I think that, you know, I don't think it diminishes the quality of your group. I think it just means that you guys like to have a little bit of fun and you piqued a couple of people's attention by doing this silly thing. I think this will be a spectacle unlike any I've ever beheld before.
So your game, make sure you mark it in your calendar now.
I'm going to have to disguise it as something other than what it is because Andrew's waxing. I don't want that showing up in my calendar. Like, why do you have a scheduled appointment called Andrew's waxing?
Imagine putting time off requests at UW and your manager sees that.
Oh my God, like, that's right. I got to make sure that I'm not working. I've got to give live commentary for body waxing. Can somebody take my shift, please?
You know that's going to spread around. People are going to hear about this, I'm telling you.
You know, and I'm sure that some people at work are going to give me some jokes about this. So, I mean, I'm already the weird nurse with the purple hair and the light up shoes. So what the hell? Comment on waxing. It'll be fine.
Awesome.
I've said waxing more in the last 3 minutes than I think I've ever said it in my whole life, whether applying it to a car or a person.
You're welcome, Adrian. You
That's
are
an
so
welcome.
And you're welcome to the viewers out there because you are invited. And don't get me wrong, there will be plenty of advertising for that one at some point. So
mark your calendars.
March 5th, 2018.
We're going to have somebody walk by in a bikini holding up a sign that says, like,
round one, round two. Well, this has been awesome. We totally went on some funky tangents, but that's kind of our MO.
And it is now 1 a.m. in true night shift form. So I am going to go start my day. This was my pre-breakfast podcast recording. So now it's time to start my night off. Woo woo.
This has been good, Adrian. We should do this more frequently, eh?
Yes, indeed. Thank you for listening to Medroom Chronicles. Go to medroomchronicles.com. Find us on Facebook. Find us on Instagram. Find us. We'll be around. Happy nursing, everybody.
Here at Medroom Chronicles, we may be uncensored, but we are not unfiltered. Protected health information has been changed and concealed to comply with HIPAA of 1996. The things we talk about are combinations of years of experience with thousands of patients, things we've read, stories we've heard. If you think we're talking about you, trust me, we're not. Also, we're real nurses here to provide accurate and helpful info, but don't take us as fact without doing your own research. Refer to your state's Board of Nursing, Practice Acts, and your institution's policies and procedures if you have questions about your practice. Lastly, our very strong opinions are ours alone and do not reflect those of our employers or educational institutions. Thanks for listening and happy nursing, guys.